Tonight we're taking a text from the book of Numbers, following our overview last week. And I've entitled this lesson, A Lost Generation, and using Numbers chapter 13 and chapter 14 as a text of the lesson. You know, there are very few words in our language that we use that really seems to strike directly at the heart of a person. And I think one of those words in our language is the word lost. It just has this bad, bad connotation with it. Think of the family less than an hour's drive from here who have lost their daughter. And they don't know where she is. And they don't know what happened to her. It's been in the newspapers. It's been on the news. What terrible agony and tragedy it is for the parents of that young lady to go through the misery of having a child that is lost and no one knows where she is. A lost child causes an entire community of people to grieve, not only the family members, the state, the nation, as it becomes known on the national news. People grieve over a lost child. And the Lord knew this when He talked about the story of the lost sheep, the lost coin, the lost boy in the Gospel of Luke in chapter 15. Jesus Himself said in Luke 19 and verse 10, "For the Son of Man is come to seek and to save that which was lost." One of the most tragic accounts in the Bible is that of a lost generation. An entire generation, not just one child. An entire generation lost, failed to enter the promised land. They perished in the wilderness. And that's what we see in Numbers chapter 13 and 14. By way of background and summary of what's going on in this book, you remember that after a very long bondage in the country of Egypt, that God delivered His people through the powerful and godly leader Moses. He brought them across the Red Sea. He brought them to Mount Sinai, where God gave them a law. And God indicated His desire to enter a relationship with His people if they would follow His law, if they would be faithful to Him. He gave them a tabernacle whereby men could meet with God, a priesthood to offer sacrifices on behalf of the people. He fed them with manna in the wilderness. He graciously attended to their needs and led them right up to the border of the promised land. To reassure them of the promised land of rest, God indicated to Moses what He wanted Moses to command of the people. And He said this at the beginning of Numbers 13. The Lord spoke to Moses saying, "Send out for yourself men so that they might spy out the land of Canaan, which I am going to give to the sons of Israel. You shall send a man from each of their father's tribes, everyone a leader among them." These are the instructions that Moses gave in chapter 13, beginning in verse 18, to these men who were chosen to go into the land and look it over. "See what the land is like, whether the people who live in it are strong or weak, whether they are few or many. How is the land in which they live? Is it good or bad? And how are the cities in which they live? Are they like open camps or with fortifications? How is the land? Is it fat or lean? Are there trees in it or not? Make an effort then to get some fruit of the land. He's providing them an avenue to have eyes and ears go into the land and see how plentiful and how gracious God had blessed this land, so that they would probably realize, yes, indeed, this is a land flowing with milk and honey. It is rich in its produce and in its goodness. They completed their assignment, but they went too far in presenting the conclusions that they had reached, and went too far in offering recommendations about what they needed to do. God had already told them what to do. What to do was not within their jurisdiction. These matters belong to the Lord. The Lord had promised them the gift of the land. You and I might say it's a done deal. Notice the report of the spies in chapter 13, beginning in verse 25. When they returned from spying out the land at the end of 40 days, they proceeded to come to Moses and Aaron and to all the congregation of the sons of Israel in the wilderness of Paran at Kadesh, and they brought back word to them and all the congregation and showed them the fruit of the land. Thus they told him and said, "We went into the land where you sent us, and it certainly does flow with milk and honey, and this is its fruit. Nevertheless, the people who live in the land are strong, and the cities are fortified and very large. And moreover, we saw the descendants of Anak there. Amalek is living in the land of the Negev, and the Hittites and the Jebusites and the Amorites are living in the hill country, and the Canaanites are living by the sea and the side of the Jordan." Then Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, "We should by all means go up and take possession of it, for we will surely overcome it." But the men who had gone up with him said, "We're not able to go up against the people, for they are too strong for us." So they gave out to the sons of Israel a bad report of the land, which they had spied out, saying, "The land through which we have gone in spying it out is a land that devours its inhabitants, and all the people whom we saw in it are men of great size. There also we saw the Nephilim. The sons of Anak are part of the Nephilim. And we became like grasshoppers in our own sight, and so we were in their sight." Notice that Joshua and Caleb gave the minority report. It concurred with the majority of what everyone saw in the land, but it didn't agree with the conclusions and the recommendations of the majority who gave the report. Caleb and Joshua had seen the obstacles that everyone reported, but the take on those obstacles, the understanding that God was with them in the overcoming of obstacles, any obstacles, obstacles that seem surmountable unto men, God was with them. But the ten didn't realize that and didn't offer that as Joshua and Caleb had done. Numbers 13 and verse 30 says, "Then Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, 'These wonderful, positive words, we should by all means go up and take possession of it. We will surely overcome it.'" There is a statement of great faith, isn't it? Great faith in their God who promised them the land. As we go to chapter 14 and look at verses 6 through 9, Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, of those who had spied out the land, tore their clothes. And they spoke to all the congregation of the sons of Israel, saying, "The land which we passed through to spy out is an exceeding good land. My parenthetical expression, just like God told them that it was. If the Lord is pleased with us, then He will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land which flows with milk and honey. My parenthetical expression, just like the Lord told them that it was. Only do not rebel against the Lord. And do not fear the people of the land, for they will be our prey. My parenthetical expression, just like the Lord told them that it would be. Their protection has been removed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them. What mighty words of faith. Don't you agree? Now, why did these reports differ? Both groups of people saw the same land. They saw the same obstacles. They saw the same pictures. They saw the same cities. They saw the same fruits. They saw the same stature of everyone there. They saw the same fortifications. Why did the reports differ? While both saw the same picture of what was in the land, the majority failed to see the most important element involved in what they were to do. They failed to see God. And what a tragic mistake that was. You know, the picture is always brighter if we include God in our thinking and in our prospective activities and actions. The picture's always brighter. We think about what God can do and what God will do for His people, and it lifts us many times out of despair. I can do all things through Him that strengthens me, Paul told the Philippians. And the Hebrew writer said, so that we can confidently say, the Lord is my helper. I will not be afraid. What will man do to me? The Lord is my helper. Why was this generation lost? Why did they perish in the wilderness? I'd like to suggest several reasons for you from our text in Romans 13 and 14. And the first one is that they drew back. Numbers 14 in verse 29 through 35 says this, your corpses will fall in the wilderness. This is what God told them after this bad report that they gave of the land, the ten gave to the land. When they refused to go up and possess the land, God said, well, if you refuse to do what I'll say, then I refuse to promise you, give you my fulfillment of my promise. Your corpses will fall in this wilderness. You know, that's an ominous thing for the God of heaven to speak to people, isn't it? What if you had heard those words? Your corpses will fall in the wilderness because of your lack of faith. You know, that would be the worst message I believe I would ever hear in my life, to hear something like that. Even all your numbered men, according to your complete number, from 20 years old and upward, who have grumbled against me. You mean grumbling against God? Is that serious of an offense? You young people, you sometimes think grumbling might be not so bad because you can grumble against your parents and probably get away with it occasionally. Maybe not if they hear you. Depending on what the subject matter is. Grumbling against God, though, think about that. The powerful God, grumbling against God. Do you want to do that? I sure don't. Your corpses will fall in the wilderness because you've grumbled against me. Surely you shall not come up into the land which I swore to settle you, except Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, and Joshua, the son of Nun. Your children, however, whom you said would become a prey, I will bring them in, and they will know the land which you have rejected. But as for you, your corpses shall fall in the wilderness. Your sons shall be shepherds for 40 years in the wilderness, and they will suffer for your unfaithfulness until your corpses lie in the wilderness. There's that phrase again that just scares me. According to the number of days which you spied out the land, 40 days, for every day you shall bear your guilt a year, even 40 years, and you will know my opposition. 40 years to learn a lesson, a bitter lesson, a hard lesson, that you shouldn't grumble against God, that you ought to believe what God says. 40 years. I, the Lord, have spoken. Surely this I will do to all this evil congregation. You know, we might have some today that would suggest, oh, they weren't so bad. They just didn't understand the way things really were. Give them a break. Don't be so hard on them. Be lenient. God said they were an evil generation because they didn't believe and because they grumbled against Him. You gathered together against me. In this wilderness they shall be destroyed, and there they will die. We like to think that our God is a loving God, which He certainly is, and that He overlooks evil in men. But here is a time when God did not overlook any evil at all. And He caused these people to die in the wilderness, to bear their guilt. The same thing will happen to us if we draw back from God. The Hebrew writer said in Hebrews 10, beginning at verse 35, "Therefore do not throw away your confidence, which has great reward. For you have need of endurance, so when you have done the will of God, you may receive what was promised. For yet in a very little while, He who is coming will come and will not delay. But my righteous one shall live by faith. And if he shrinks back, my soul has no pleasure in him. But we are not of those who shrink back to destruction, but those who have faith to the preserving of the soul." It's the same thing, isn't it? It's the same type of situation. And we're free to draw back or to be faithful. They drew back. That's why they were lost. Secondly, they were satisfied with the majority report. They rejected the minority report about the conditions of the land and the people in the land. Exodus 23 and verse 2, in the first part of that verse, declares, "You shall not follow the masses to do evil." Most people want to do evil. Here's the warning: don't follow most people. Don't follow them. They became angry at the opposition. All the congregation said, "Stone them with stones. Kill them. Put them to death. Stop their mouths." That's a horrible thing. It's dangerous to blindly follow the majority of people. We've made the point before, the closer you get to Christ, the fewer there are. That's a minority. Noah was a small minority. Elijah stood alone against 450 prophets of Baal. Who was the minority? Who was the majority? Barabbas got more votes than Jesus. Thirdly, they magnified their difficulties. And you can do that. If you're a pessimistic person, you're going to see all of the bad things of life, All of the bad trials, all of the bad circumstances, all of the bad results, and you're going to focus on those. They saw only trials and hardships, and at the same time, closed their eyes to the blessings that God promised them that they would receive. They saw giants and walled cities. They forgot about God and His providence and His love and His care for them. The Apostle Paul wrote about forgetting his thorn in the flesh because he had an assurance from the Lord in 2 Corinthians 12:7-9. With every difficulty, God makes provision for His own. The Roman writer said in Romans 8 and verse 31, "And what shall we say to these things? If God is for us, who can be against us? Who is it that can overcome God?" Remember Philippians 4:13, "He strengthens me." Hebrews 13:6, "The Lord is my helper. What other helper do we need?" They magnified their difficulties. They did not respect themselves. We became like grasshoppers in our own sight. We sold ourselves short. We didn't give ourselves proper credit as God's children. We can do that sometimes. We can sell ourselves short. We can have a lower estimation of ourselves and our abilities, what we can do and what we can accomplish if we're not careful, because we forget that our God is with us. They should have remembered that they numbered 603,500 warriors who had never before been defeated. The same God who delivered them from the bondage of Egypt and the powerful Egyptian army was with them in giving them the promised land. But they didn't think about that. They did not properly respect themselves. We must be very careful that we do not present the things that God has given us in a negative way. Remember what John wrote, "And you will not belittle your own worth." We are the children of God. We are God's children. What great manner of love He's bestowed upon us that we can be called the children of God in 1 John 3:1-2. They murmured against God. They griped and complained against God. They turned from His authority in so doing. They planned an insurrection against Moses and Aaron, and thus against God. And their constant whining and bickering about things provoked the Lord to anger, something we humans never want to do. Numbers 14:11-12, the Lord said to Moses, "How long will this people spurn me? And how long will they not believe in me, despite all the signs which I have performed in their midst? I will smite them with pestilence and dispossess them, and I will make you into a nation greater and mightier than they." And had it not been for the compassion and the intercession of Moses, that's exactly what God would have done. They didn't offer anything constructive. They loudly criticized God Himself. They were looking backwards and not forward. The beginning of Numbers 14, "Then all the congregation lifted up their voices and cried, and the people wept that night. All the sons of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron, and the whole congregation said to them, 'Would that we had died in the land of Egypt. Would that we had died in the land of Egypt. Or would that we had died in this wilderness.'" Now think about that. A better predicament for us would be to go back and live under the excruciating bondage of unfair taskmasters in the country of Egypt than to go to a place flowing with milk and honey that God has promised us. Something doesn't sound right about that, does it? Would that we had died in the land of Egypt. Why is the Lord bringing us into this land to fall by the sword? Our wives and our little ones will become plunder. Would it not be better for us to return to Egypt? They turned their attention back to Egypt. They remembered the experiences of yesterday, but they didn't look graciously forward in anticipation of the wonderful blessing that God had promised them at the end of the road. They were on the verge. God's people must look to the future. If we look backwards, we'll only see the bondage that we left. And maybe that's why Jesus said, when you put your hand to the plow and you look back, you're not fit for the kingdom of God. In Luke 9 and verse 62. If you've been raised up with Christ, Paul told the Colossians, if you've been raised up with Christ, keep seeking the things which are above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. Set your mind on things above, not on the things of the earth. They were unwilling to pay the price. They thought about the price. They reasoned out how it would go. But they were unwilling to pay the price. They considered it to be too much of a cost. They might have become too soft from accepting free manna, free bread, and many of God's providential blessings for them as they trekked through the wilderness. We have to be willing to meet the demands of God. Jesus said, if anyone wishes to come after me, he must deny himself and take up his cross and follow me daily. Count the cost, but at the same time, be willing to pay the price. Luke 14:27, whoever does not carry his own cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. Verse 33 of that Luke 14 says, so then none of you can be my disciple who does not give up all of his own possessions. You willing to do that? Are you willing to make that sacrifice for the Lord? Paul said, I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory that is to be revealed in us. We have to look forward for that, don't we? If we begin to look around and look behind us and think about the glory of what we left behind, even if it is as tarnished as it can possibly be, if we take our eyes off of what God has provided for His children in the future, we're looking at the wrong thing, and it'll affect our walk. Some of us may want to go back to that. Keep thinking about the glory that is to be revealed in us. It's a horrible thing to contemplate an entire generation being lost. Lost, such a horrible word. An entire generation being lost is such a horrible concept. We have to apply these lessons to ourselves. Whatever was written in earlier times was written for our instruction, that through perseverance and encouragement of the Scriptures, we might have hope. And that's how we live our lives as Christians, in hope. These things happened to them as an example. They were written for our instruction, Paul told the Corinthians. Upon whom the ends of the ages have come. 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 11. We must not ignore the warnings given to us. God's not wasting His breath. the inspired writers are not wasting ink when they tell us the warnings that God has for men. Let us fear, if while a promise remains of entering his rest, any one of you may seem to have come short of it. For indeed, we have good news preached to us, just as they also. But the word they heard did not profit them, because it was not united by faith in those who heard. They all received the same promises. But the 10 spies did not mix those promises with faith, real faith, believing exactly what God said, trusting exactly what God revealed to them. They didn't mix it with faith. Thus they perished in the wilderness just as God said they would. What about you tonight? Are you relying on the promises of God? Do you trust them? Do you act upon them? We plead with you to not be part of a lost generation. How horrible it is. And if we can assist you in your obedience to the gospel tonight, there's not a person in this room that will not rejoice with you and with the angels in heaven if you'll do that this very night. Can we help you in a spiritual way? If we can, please come to the front while we stand together and encourage you by singing this song.